and you're about to hear Bob's Slapdown Funhouse, with parody, satire, and comedy. Any reference to Bob, the church, episode, genius, religion, politics, or any other touchy subjects is intended only as humor, and should cast no reflection on the high standards of WREK Atlanta, its staff, or that of Georgia Tech.
Good evening, and fondest condolences. We all know we hate this time of year, and we all know why. So, just sit back and try to relax.
On the first day of Star Wars, my true love he gave to me a pod racer in a pear tree. Oh, thank you. On the second day of Star Wars, R2 said to me, Beetle, Beetle, Boop, and a pod racer in a pear tree. On the third day of Star Wars, a robot said to me, 3PO, Beetle, Beetle, Boop, and a pod racer in a pear tree. On the fourth day of Star Wars, Darth Vader said to me, the Force is strong with this one. 3PO, Beetle, Beetle, Boop, and a pod racer in a pear tree.
Once there was a frisky city fox named Phil. It was almost Xmas, and Phil had no money to buy his babies Xmas presents. Phil worried and worried because he had already promised a new fur coat to his wife, Felicity Fox, and plenty of brand new toys for the babies.
Oh, what am I gonna do? My family lives simply enough as it is, and here I am with nothing on Xmas. Oh, that Billy Bunny offered me a job selling Xmas pellets, but I just can't get in trouble with the pigs again.
That night in his den, Phil could not sleep. He kept tossing and turning, looking at the peaceful, trusting face of his wife. He got up to pace his den and kept returning to his baby's room where they slept in a fluffy pile.
I'll do it.
And so Phil skittered as fast as he could to the burrow of Billy Bunny.
Hey, Steve. Long time no see.
Phil.
Yeah. Anyway, here's the deal. I front you 50 pellets. You sell them. Pay me back. Split the difference. And then we go again. Cut it. Double it. Before you know, you got your own career.
This is a one-time thing, Billy.
Yeah. That's what they all say. Good luck. Gotta go.
And so Phil took the pellets and went right out to make his money. Phil sold most of the Xmas pellets quickly on the streets, one by one. But as the shadows of the day grew long, pellet creatures stopped coming by. Phil had already made enough money to pay back Billy and have a merry Xmas. But he still had a few pellets left, so he went to the park to try to get rid of the rest. Now, Phil did not like to go to the park, because even though there were lots of pellet creatures, the mean old pigs were there too. And the mean old pigs did not like pellets or pellet creatures at all.
Get your Christmas cheer, folks. Get it while it lasts.
Pellets,
said a friendly dog.
All right. You got the money? Good boy.
Here you go.
But just as Phil was making his way out of the park, flush with success and money, he heard a disturbing sound. It was the pigs. They had collared and leashed the friendly dog and were coming after Phil next. Phil ran and ran, but the pigs were everywhere singing their song.
Wrong is wrong and mine is right. When we catch you, we'll take a bite. We are strong, so if you fight, we'll beat you down all day and night.
The pigs took Phil to their pen. Phil was sad. He knew that Xmas was ruined now. Felicity would not have her fur coat, and the babies would not have their toys.
On the fifth day of Star Wars, Chewbacca said to me, Force is strong with this one, 3PO, Beetle, Beetle, Boop, and a pod racer in a pear tree. On the sixth day of Star Wars, George Lucas said to me, there'll be six episodes. The Force is strong with this one, 3PO, Beetle, Beetle, Boop, and a pod racer in a pear tree. Good, you're getting enough of the hang of it that you can do the pretty harmonies that you can't believe you're going to be doing with Star Wars voices. On the seventh day of Star Wars, Luke Skywalker said to me, I'm saving both my friends six episodes. The Force is strong with this one, 3PO, Beetle, Beetle, Boop, and a pod racer in a pear tree.
Phil stayed in the pen for days. He wondered why his wife, Felicity, had not come to visit him. But he decided that he would not want for her to see him like this anyway. Phil sat and sat. He talked or fought with the other animals in the pen. There were a lot of crows, because pigs especially hate crows and would put them in the pen sometimes for made-up reasons. One day, a visitor came for Phil. He was happy and ashamed at the same time, thinking that Felicity had finally come to see him. But instead, it was a weasel.
Weasel visitor for the prisoner.
Thank you, officer.
Who are you?
Wallace Weaselstein, attorney at law with Weaselstein and Moberg. Listen, this is going to be difficult, Phil. Foxes are rarely presumed innocent in jury trials, especially foxes with the previous record.
Can I at least post bail and be home with my family for Xmas?
Well, I've already made arrangements with Miss Fox to cover my retainer, so as far as bail is concerned, you're on your own. But what I will do is move to have the trial before Xmas.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Weaselstein.
Don't mention it. It's nothing.
While Phil waited for his trial, he tried to fight his boredom by sharpening his shank. When that got boring, he would lift weights. Suddenly, he remembered that he still had his phone call left. He thought hard about who to call, who could best help, and came to an obvious answer.
Thank you for calling Claus Enterprises, a wholly owned subsidiary of Glorpco International. To leave your Xmas wish for Santa, please press 1.
I'm glad you called, but we're not home, so leave a message. At the tone, I said, wait for the beep. You gotta leave your name, you gotta leave your number, so...
Wait for the beep!
Hello, Santa. If you're there, pick up. Listen, I know you're busy right now, but this is Phil Fox. I was wondering if somehow you could fix it so that a fox gets a break for once. I know I've done some bad things in my life, but no one ever caught me for those things. All I wanted was a Merry Xmas for my family. Santa, are you there?
But Santa never picked up.
On the 8th day of Star Wars, the Emperor said to me, "Hate will make you strong, saving both my friends 6 episodes. Force is strong with this one, 3PO, Beetle, Beetle, Boop, and a pod racer in a pear tree." On the 9th day of Star Wars, Anakin said to me, "I'm 9, but I'm mature. Hate will make you strong. 7, both my friends, 6 episodes. Force is strong with this one, 3PO, Beetle, Beetle, Boop, and a pod racer in a pear tree."
Finally, 2 days before Xmas, Phil had his trial, his chance at justice. The pigs took him to the basement of a warehouse where Wallace Weaselstein, attorney at law, met him.
"Hello, Mr. Fox. You got a haircut. That's good. Listen, I've already moved for a bench trial to try to negate the issue of jury prejudice."
Okay.
"But, unfortunately, this judge is a kangaroo."
What does that mean?
"Well, we'll just have to wait and see. The good news is that we won't have to wait for long. Your case is up right after this sentencing."
"Mr. Strawberry, I specifically told you that if I saw you before me 8 more times, I would lock you up and throw away the key. But, given your postseason batting average and your chronic case of syphilis, I'll sentence you to 1 week probation and a $25,000 fine. Good day."
Phil was scared. He didn't have a postseason anything or any chronic diseases. The persecutor, one Sydney Snake, said terrible things about Phil. By the time he was through, Phil himself was wondering if he was such a good fox. Finally, it was his lawyer's turn.
"Your Honor, nulla pro bono sativa. And furthermore, caveat pluribus unum."
"I see. Mr. Fox, Persecutor Snake informs me that you have refused to assist in any further investigation of those who may also be party to this case."
"Your Honor, my client, corpus delictum. Veni, vidi, ad nauseam."
"I see. Well, in that case, I have no option but to find you guilty. Now, to the sentence. Mr. Fox, in light of the spirit of the season, I'm going to offer you a choice. You can either pay a fine of $10,000 and serve 200 hours of community service as a surrogate incubator at the home for abandoned eggs, or you can go to jail for not less than 7 and not more than 10 years.
Your Honor, my client is destitute and emptor of chlamydia, and furthermore, habeas, never mind.
Right, 7 to 10. Good day.
Phil felt like his stomach was on fire and his legs had turned to putty.
Weaselstein, what was that? You were supposed to help me.
Sorry, Mr. Fox, I owe you one. To be honest, I was up all night going over your briefs with Miss Fox, and I'm exhausted. Good luck, Phil.
On the 10th day of Star Wars, the Empress said to me, 10 more years, 9, but I'm mature. 8 will make you strong, 7, both my friends, 6 episodes. Force is strong with this one, 3PO, Beetle, Beetle, Boop, and a pod racer in a pear tree. On the 11th day of Star Wars, Obi-Wan said to me, we're leaving Tatooine, 10 more years, 9, but I'm mature. 8 will make you strong, 7, both my friends, 6 episodes. Force is strong with this one, 3PO, Beetle, Beetle, Boop, and a pod racer in a pear tree. You've been wondering what the hell Smith's been up to with this one, haven't you? Well, we're there. On the 12th day of Star Wars, Yoda said to me,
backwards teach you to sing I have.
Leaving Tatooine, 10 more years, 9, but I'm mature. 8 will make you strong, save and bold, my friend, 6 episodes. Rah, 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 rah. Force is strong with this one, 3PO, Beetle, Beetle, Boop, and a pod racer in a pear tree.
On Xmas Eve, Phil sat in his cage, still stunned from the turn of events. He imagined his family in their den, with no presents, no tree, and no Phil. Phil began to sob quietly.
Santa, why have you forsaken me? I tried to do the right thing. I didn't even squeal on the bunny. What do you want from me?
Just then he heard the muffled sound of jingle bells and a distant, familiar laugh.
Ho, ho, ho!
He had come. Santa had remembered him. Phil rushed to the front of his cage and was instantly crestfallen. Just outside the door were two pigs that erupted into laughter at the sight of his disappointment.
Your soul is good, your crime is slight. Were this world fair, your home tonight. But you're weak and might makes right, so we go home on Xmas night.
With that, they were gone, and Phil was left to his lonesome misery. He laid down on his wood shavings and moaned softly to himself. After a few minutes, the bells returned, but Phil did not stir. If he could not be home for Xmas, then at least he would not let his misery become the sport of the mean pigs. But the bells continued, and that familiar laugh again.
Ho, ho, ho!
Oh, just go home and leave me alone.
Phil rolled over to face the wall of his cage, but the sounds continued. Phil could not understand why the pigs would not leave him alone, and thought that if he laid still for long enough, they would leave. But just then, Phil's cage was filled with a soft, warm glow. He slowly rolled over to see what new insult was upon him, and there he was, Saint Nick himself.
Ho, ho, ho! Merry Xmas, Phil Fox. Merry Xmas.
Santa, you came.
And how? I mean, of course I did, Phil. And I stopped by your den on the way here with new toys for all your babies.
Oh, thank you, Santa. And Felicity, how's my wife? Did she get her fur coat?
Ho, ho, ho. Your wife is fine. She doesn't have any milk for me, but she gave me a cookie, though. I'm afraid I don't have a fur coat, so I gave her a nice pearl necklace instead.
I don't understand.
Well, Phil, now that you're gone, she's a ho-ho-ho. Billy Bunny turned her out about half an hour after you were arrested.
Ho-ho-ho.
Now, Phil, what sort of world do you think we live in? It's no better out there than it is in here. Worse, as a matter of fact. At least in here, you know where you stand.
But what about me? I can't go away for 7 years.
Well, Phil, in your message, you said that all you wanted was a Merry Xmas for your family. And I've seen to that. Ho, ho, ho! I'm just jerking you around, Phil. I think I have something for you.
With that, Santa reached into his suit and produced a large, festively wrapped box. Phil carefully opened the box, and when he lifted off the top, his Xmas spirit swelled. Inside the box was a slew of beaver magazines, including Just Hatched, Wild Goose, Pelt Lickers, Bovine Booty, Storks with Dorks, and his favorite, Spread Vixen. They kept coming, more beaver magazines than what could fit into a normal box.
You see, Phil, that gold-digging woman of yours is most of the reason you're in here. Those glossy hussies will never betray you, Phil. And as far as getting out of here, well, Phil, I shouldn't really be telling you this, but sometime in the next few Xmases, Santa's gonna pull a nice, fat swine flu out of his bag and give it to the whole world. Ho, 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 ho. The only creatures left will be shut-ins and prisoners. But if you decide that you do want out, there may be a little something in the bottom of that box to help you out. Oh, ho, 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 ho.
Thank you, Santa.
Don't thank me, Phil. Thank the Chinese. Oh, ho, 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 ho. Oh, ho, ho, Merry Xmas, Phil.
And in a twinkle of the old man's eye, he was gone. Phil absently stared at his mountain of pornography for a second before digging to the bottom of the box. At the bottom was a narrow rectangular package, which Phil quickly unwrapped. True to his word, Santa had given him a never-break brand titanium industrial file. Gift in hand, he walked over to his window and looked out on the twinkling lights of the city.
Gosh, once everyone drops dead, it looks like it might be up to the crows to run the world. But I think I'll hold on to this, just in case.
Phil hid his file in his bed of wood shavings and curled up with a back issue of Spread Vixen.
Oh, yeah. Joy to the world, Merry... Happy New Year!
And at long last, Phil had his Merry Xmas.
Now it's Christmas bonus and all you atheists too! Merry f***ing Christmas!
Do you remember the story of Phil Fox? Last Xmas, Phil was desperate to squeeze a drop of Xmas cheer from the stone of his existence and wound up sentenced to 7 to 10 years in the pen for his trouble. But with the lucky phone call to a certain jolly fat man, Phil was blessed with a very special Xmas visit from Santa Claus himself, and a shower of beaver mags. If you're like me, you've probably been laying awake at night wondering how Phil is doing. Unfortunately, Phil was a little, demonstrative in his appreciation of Santa's generosity. His bounty was soon discovered, and the stern warden had Phil arrested and charged with capital pornographateering. Luckily, he pled down to 20 years for felonious intent to masturbate. So, in case someone asks, Phil is stir-crazy in the pig pen in Wahoo, Nebraska. His hobbies include push-ups, spending time in solitary, and muttering to himself. Like this.
Oh, those beaver mags were more trouble than they were worth. Even that stupid file Santa gave me turned out to be glass. Cut me up something awful. Damn that fat man. I'd like to settle that crazy bastard's score. Oh, I know what I'd like to do. I'll settle his hash.
Among the many things Phil did not know was the fact that he was being observed by his tyrannical warden, old One-Eye the Shih Tzu, and his mysterious guest.
This twisted pervert was caught hoarding enough porn to damn a small nation.
Well done, Morden. This is the perfect combination of hatred and fear we look for in the CIEIO.
Thank you. I shall summon him.
Phil is almost happy to see the guards when they pull him out of solitary. He is so excited to be out of his cell that he doesn't even mind the pig's usual coarse demeanor.
Prisoner for the warden.
Come in, prisoner. This is Agent Vicarious George Lucas Lynx of the Special Holiday Forces.
Hello, Phil. I've been watching you. Your cage is very amusing to me. But I have a sneaking suspicion that you don't agree, do you, Phil?
That's better than getting pecked by the crows.
I'm sure it is, Phil. But wouldn't you like to sleep at home?
Well, sure, but say, what is this? Are you hitting on me?
Silence, pervert! This fine patriot is offering you a pardon!
An unconditional release, if you know what I mean.
Well, gee, ever since my dear sweet Felicity got put on the corner by that Billy Bunny, I haven't heard a lick from my litter. I sure would like to see them again.
I absolutely 100% guarantee that will happen.
Gosh, that's a relief.
Yes, it is. So don't forget that.
Well, what do I have to do?
Phil, you are in the unique position of having last contact with one of our operatives.
Really? Me? Who is it?
We know that degenerate idolater contacted you last Xmas, prisoner. Do not pretend to be dumber than you are.
Whoa, heel boy. Phil, you can see how important this is to everyone. Colonel Claus is a highly prized asset, but his methods have become unsound.
Well, what do you mean?
Our listing post picked up this broadcast from the North Pole.
Transmission number 13 received 01 December 14th, 0420 hours, Sector Foxtrot, Uniform Kilo.
Ho, ho, ho! We must kill them! We must incinerate them! Miscreant after miscreant, delinquent after delinquent, generation after generation. What do you call it when the naughty accuse the nice? They are naughty! They are naughty, and we have a list of them! Those nabobs! I hate them. How I hate them.
And to further illustrate my point, lights.
Sunnyvale Elementary School. Naughty's out number 9 is 5-1. Spitballs. Wet willies. You name it.
Oh, my goodness.
Claus moves in and eliminates 4 kids, including 2 hall monitors of the night list.
Which he had fingered as double agents. No permission slip. No Dear Santa letter. He just thought it up and did it.
Fighting dropped in half. Sassback fell to 0. Hardcore naughtyism dropped off to nothing.
Lights.
Golly, he's effective.
Yes, but...
Phil, the PTA cannot tolerate this sort of thing. This Claus character was already a mockery of our invisible master, Jesus the Carpenter Ant. Every time Claus eliminates a child, he potentially transforms a parent into an unencumbered, non-dues-paying, childless adult. Think about it, Phil. PTA dues spent on condoms and spermicidal lubricant.
Your mission is to proceed up to the North Pole in a one-horse open sleigh. Learn what you can along the way. When you find Claus, infiltrate his village by whatever means available, and terminate the Colonel's command.
Terminate? Santa Claus?
He's up there operating without any decent restraint. Totally beyond the pale of nice conduct. And we can only imagine how bad the elf situation has gotten without the iron grip of Claus to keep them in line. Terminate Claus with extreme prejudice.
You mean you want me to use an axe handle?
Whatever rocks your boat, sailor.
Well, this is terrific! Nothing could possibly go wrong now.
That very day, Phil and Lucas head north to meet the sleigh.
Your escort is a rough and tumble Quebecy bullfrog named Francois. Here's your sled. Run chop chop to catch it. Here's your last minute dossier of disturbing information. Bye. Oh, yeah. If you screw up and run off, we'll kill your family, which I might just do for fun anyway.
What did he say?
Oh, he says a lot of things.
Hi, I'm Phil Fox. Damn good to meet you. I'm going home.
Oh, you live at the North Pole?
No, after that.
Oh, right. Sure you are.
No, really. As soon as we take care of Claus, I'm going back to my empty den.
Sounds heavenly. I have a jar of tadpoles back at my pad in the swamps of Montreal. When we get home, I'm going back to my original job as a saucier.
A saucy what?
A saucier, an expert in sauces.
Well, that must come in real handy in the Arctic.
Don't forget, filthy prisoner, I am authorized to use deadly force of vous.
Oh, right. So, what's the plan from here, Francois?
We will meet up with the ski patrol to get us to a rough patch of toy boys operating a little farther south than usual. Oh, don't worry. They're not Claus toy boys, they're wild. You can tell they are feral elves when they cut the bells off their shoes.
Oh, well, that's good to know.
So, they say the fat man has something up his sleeve.
Oh, you mean his Yule log.
Oh, you say that, but I bet he is barely a hermaphrodite.
As the small talk dies off, Phil looks through the Claus dossier. The first item is an old naughty list from 1996. This naughty list has a long memory, including some old scores like Emmanuel Lewis and Drew Barrymore. After that were official documents explaining how Claus had been cooking the books for his front companies and using the skim to finance experiments in Chinese laboratories, tinkering with the pixie dust he uses to wedge his ass down chimneys, developing a new airborne strain that passes quickly from creature to creature and strips flesh to the bone at the rate of 1 pound an hour. He is going to wage global chemical warfare.
Holy crap.
Something is amiss?
No. Go back to your humming.
The last item is a letter Claus tried to send to his mistress that was intercepted.
Felicity, I'm afraid that both you and your precious sugar walls have been worried for not hearing from me these past weeks. But my situation here has become a difficult one. I've been officially accused of naughtiness by the Special Holiday Forces. The charges are unjustified. They are, in fact, under the circumstances, quite completely insane. Ho, ho, ho. Sell your husband's den. Sell your husband's car. Sell your husband's kids. As for the charges, I am unconcerned. I'm beyond their timid, lying morality. And so, I'm beyond caring. You have all my faith. Your loving Candy Cane.
Why do I always go for the fast ones?
Phil and Francois slide further into the frozen wasteland. They nervously shift in their seats, trying to avoid eye contact. At last, they rendezvous with the ski patrol.
These missus, they are crazy, this ski patrol. They are supposed to look for bungling Canucks freezing in the snow, and there are plenty, believe me. But mostly they just fly and ski around looking for toy boys to hotnog.
Hey, you guys, I'm Captain Kilgore Moose. Holy Jesus, you're Francois, the famous downhill skier.
Oui, it is I.
Come on, hop on. We got some toy boys to hotnog. Punches, punches! It's Francois Frog, the downhiller! Oh boy, this I gotta see! Hey, Francois, watch me pull out some skis from my helmet.
Is that safe in a helicopter?
Probably not. I guess that's why you're the expert. Hey, Punches, set it down on that mountaintop. Get out and ski, Francois!
Oh, what should I do?
You're coming with me. You gotta see this.
Good luck, crazy, stupid Canucks.
Phil and the moose soared high above the battlefield the sleigh dangling beneath them.
Look how that hill breaks! To the left and to the right! There it is! That hollowed-out tree! Our intelligence reports say that's where the elves make their cookies! And chemical weapons! We're gonna burn the hell out of that tree! And every damn toy boy in it, under it, and around it!
The ski patrol waged a fearsome offensive on the tree with tow missiles.
All right, Pontius, let him have the hot nog. Oh, this is gonna be great! You smell that? Do you smell that? Fresh-baked cookies, son! Nothing else in the world smells like that! Oh, I love the smell of cookies in the morning. You know, one time we had a tree hot nog for 12 hours. When it was all over, I walked up. We didn't find one of them, and not one goddamn toy boy corpse. The smell, you know that cinnamon smell? The whole hill smelled like victory.
Very impressive, Nutty Moose.
Thanks a lot, Francois. That's an honor.
So, Crazy Moose, which way is the north?
Hey, all you have to do is follow the reindeer tracks, those filthy animals. And, the yellow snow. Yeah, that's them. They're disgusting. Good luck, soldiers. Kill a bunch of them for me.
You know, he's right. Those reindeer really are filthy animals.
What do you mean?
Well, just look at them. Their coats are so mangy, and their chicks are so butch with those antlers. I mean, they're disgusting.
No, Phil, you've got it all wrong. With the right sauce, even the sewer horse can be made palatable.
Well, that moose seemed to think that they weren't all that.
Oh, it's just a case of the antler envy. You know how it is.
I guess.
Phil and Francois chatted nervously for a while until the excitement of the ski patrol wore off. At last, they fell into the dull routine of Arctic travel. Many frozen miles slipped by to the cadence of the horse butt.
Ah, you remember that I was bragging about how long my tongue she is?
Yeah, I'm sure you could snag more than one type of fly with it.
Well, I... I licked my own back.
Well, so what? You'd think you'd have a tolerance for that kind of thing off your own back.
Oh, no, the French, they are highly intolerant.
Far out.
You wanna try?
Oh, no thanks. I gave that up with the 60s.
Suit yourself.
You don't look so good. I didn't know frog eyes could dilate like that. What the hell is that?
Ah.
All those things sticking up over there in the distance. What the hell is this place?
Ah, she is the harp.
Harp?
Oui. The high-frequency active auroral research program.
I don't want to know about this, do I?
Ah, only if the idea of a giant corrupt capitalist system with the power to cook anyone's internal organs anywhere in the world is disturbing to you.
No, that's not so bad, but what's with all the split-open Arctic hares?
Oh, it looks like there was some kind of orgy among the antennas.
What?
Hey, there's an egghead. Let's ask him. Hey, egghead, what happened here, huh?
Oh, you missed it. It was terrific then. That Billy Bunny has the finest bitches in the Arctic wasteland. She was laying eggs left and right until those damn huskies crashed the party.
Did you say Billy Bunny was here?
Yeah, he headed north.
Well, what are we waiting for? North to adventure again, huh?
But I gotta get me some of that trim. I've been in prison for so goddamn long.
No, Phil. These bitches are frigid, you know.
I don't care if they're dead. I need to get some.
Phil, please. They are all dead. Let's move on, no?
Absolutely goddamn right. No, okay, I've got it. Never get out of the sleigh. Never get out of the sleigh.
Some say the North Pole is the asshole of the world. judging by the expressions on the faces of the severed heads stuffed into the stockings that became more and more common closer to the North Pole, it was a common sentiment.
All right, Zen, we are here. Let us make practice of the killing on that guy over there.
Billy? Billy Bunny? What in the name of Jesus are you doing here?
I'm in. Don't be dense, Steve.
My name is Phil.
Who do you think introduced Claus to your wife in the first place? You have a clue, right?
Oh, I must meet this exceptional lady of yours, Phil.
It's not funny. Damn it, Billy. Show me where Claus is right now.
Hey, Phil. You don't talk to Claus. You listen to him. He's a warrior saying the classic sense. I mean, sometimes he'll, you'll say Merry Xmas to him, right? He'll just walk by you. He won't even notice you. And suddenly he'll grab you, and he'll throw you in a pile of reindeer crap. And he'll say to you, like, do you know lid is the middle word in holiday? If you keep your head when all about you losing theirs, it doesn't mean you don't understand the situation. I mean, I'm a little bunny. I'm a little bunny. He's a great man. The women come and go. Speaking of Michelangelo, I mean...
Are you sure I can't kill this guy?
Hey, man, you ought to be mellow. The elves get crazy, man. Crazy.
Okay, frogging the cold is not such a good thing. So let's get to the killing.
Now you've done it. Now you've done it, man. They're gonna sing. They're gonna go crazy, man. The Sirens of the North, man. This is like Pandora's box with pointed ears.
You better watch out. You better not cry. You better not pout. I'm telling you why. Santa Claus is coming to town. He's making a list and checking it twice. Gonna find out who's not.
They're ripping him apart!
Ah! Ah! Oh, you fools, you idiots! That is the wrong sauce to use with my legs! Ah! Ah! Oh no, that is the wrong way to put a firecracker in my butt! See? You only blew my butt off, you idiots. And yet, I die.
Oh. I was pretty fond of that frog.
Luckily for Phil and Billy, the elves calm down when Claus arrives.
Don't worry about them. They're all worked up about the big reindeer sacrifice tonight. Come on, Phil. Let's walk and talk. I've seen punishment. Punishment that you've seen. But you have no right to call me naughty. You have a right to kill me. You have the right to do that. It's impossible for words to describe what is necessary to those who do not know what naughty means. Naughty has a face, and you must make a friend of naughtiness. Naughtiness and punishment are your friends. If they are not, then they are enemies to be feared. They are truly enemies. I remember when I was still into woodwork, I would hand out wooden dolls to the little girls of the world. I was getting ready to call it another Xmas, and this little girl came running after me, crying. She couldn't speak, so I went back to her apartment complex, and the naughty older boys had come through and hacked off every doll's arm. There they were in a pile of little arms. And I remember, I cried. I wept like some little bitch. I wanted to tear my teeth out. I didn't know what I wanted to do. I want to remember it. I never want to forget it. I never want to forget. I thought, my God, the genius of that. The genius. The will to do that. Perfect. Genuine. Complete. Crystalline. Pure. And I realized that naughty was stronger than nice. You have to be nice and at the same time be able to utilize your naughtiness without feeling. Without passion, without checking the list even once. Because it's checking. Checking the list that defeats me.
Well, I know what you mean.
Phil, I know you've come here to terminate my command. I've been up here a long time. I worry that your wife, my bitch, won't understand the things that I've done. The difference I've made. Do you know what I mean?
Well, I read you loud and clear, Claus.
I want you to explain to her what you have witnessed here. Because there is nothing I detest more than the stench of lies. And gingerbread.
Well, Claus, if you know why I'm here, you don't seem too upset about it.
Come on, Phil. It's time. We both know it. Put me out of my misery.
I don't know if I can do it. For so many years, you brought joy to so many good little boys and girls around the world.
I glazed your wife's chocolate donut while you were in prison.
Well, that whore was doing everybody I know. As soon as I was locked behind bars, she gave it up to all those graffiti guys.
Come on, finish me off. Come on, you big pussy. Come on! Remember that fire truck you wanted when you were five?
Well, I just thought it would be fun to be a fox with a fire truck.
Do you know why you didn't get it?
Well, I assumed I had been bad at some point.
It's because you're weak. You're worthless and weak. You could never kill a man like me. That's why your wife's been drinking my milk and I've been eating her cookies. What is your major malfunction, numbnuts? Mommy not give you enough love?
What? Well, look, Claus, I've had just about enough of you. You should just shut your mouth. God damn you to hell, Claus!
In his fury, Phil picked up the first thing he could find, which was a giant candy cane.
Take this, you jolly old fat man! God damn you and all! Oh, God, I hate you! I hate Xmas, and I hate you, and I hate Felicity, and I hate you! I hate you because I hate you!
Cross my name off the list. Cross my name off.
Phil stands, drenched in Claus's blood. He's afraid to walk outside. The elves might be angry. Having stared death in the face, Phil fears little else and proceeds outside to view the assembled elves.
Aw, screw it. What's the worst that could happen?
The elves take one look at Phil's bloody candy cane, and with their innate elven instincts, recognize Phil as their new master.
Well, how's it going, guys? Hey, whoa, what are you doing? Well, I don't know, oh my. Well, if you insist, come on. Yeah, eat of my flesh, you little bastards. Oh yeah, these pointy ears are great to hold on to. Oh my God, okay, this isn't so bad. Well, I get a merry Xmas after all. Oh my, yeah, well, all right.
But just then, Phil awoke. Bloody, bruised and battered, hanging from the shower stall in the prison shower.
Oh, whoa. What the hell was that? Oh, my. Oh, no. Not again. I'm not going to be able to sleep on my back for a week. I need some toothpaste. But, well, if I'm here, then I didn't kill Claus after all. Well, I guess everybody else will have a good Xmas this year.
Or will they? Merry Xmas, everyone!
There, isn't that better? These are the people that made you feel better, and how they did it. Tom Smith, with the 12 Days of Star Wars.
Phil Fox versus Xmas. And Apocalypse Claus
by the Lymph Node Institute.
To wrap things up, William S. Burroughs with The Junkie's Christmas.
It was Christmas Day and Daddy the car wiper hit the street junk, sick and broke after 72 hours in a precinct cell. It was a clear, bright day, but there was no warmth in the sun. Daddy shivered with an inner cold. He turned up the collar of his worn, greasy black overcoat. This beat Benny wouldn't pawn for a deuce, he thought. It was in the West 90s. A long block of brownstone rooming houses. Here and there, a holly wreath in a clean black window. Danny's senses registered everything sharp and clear with the painful intensity of junk sickness. The light hurt his dilated eyes. He walked past a car, darting his pale blue eyes sideways in quick appraisal. There was a package on the seat, and one of the ventilator windows was unlocked. Danny walked on 10 feet, no one in sight. He snapped his fingers and went through a pantomime of remembering something and wheeled around. No one. Bad setup, he decided. Street being empty like this, I stand out conspicuous. Gotta make it fast. He reached for the ventilator window. A door opened behind him. Daddy whipped out a rag and began polishing the car windows. He could feel the man standing behind him. What are you doing? Danny turned as if surprised. Oh, just thought your car windows needed polishing, mister. The man had a frog face and a deep south accent. He was wearing a camel's hair overcoat. My car don't need polishing, nothing stole out of it neither. Danny slid sideways as the man grabbed for him. I wasn't looking to steal nothing, mister. I'm from the south too, Florida. Goddamn sneaking thief. Danny walked away fast and turned a corner. Better get out of the neighborhood. That hick is likely to call the law. He walked 15 blocks, sweat running down his body. There was a raw ache in his lungs. His lips drew back off his yellow teeth in a snarl of desperation. I got a score somehow, if I had some decent clothes. Then he saw a suitcase standing in a doorway. Good leather. He stopped and pretended to look for a cigarette. Funny, he thought. No one around. Inside, maybe, phoning for a cab. The corner was only a few houses away. Danny took a deep breath and picked up the suitcase. He made the corner, another block, another corner. The case was heavy. I got a score all right, he thought. Maybe enough for a 16th in a room. Danny shivered and twitched, feeling a warm rum and heroin emptying into his vein. Let's have a quick look. He stepped into Morningside Park. No one around. Jesus, I never saw the town this empty. He opened the suitcase. Two long packages in brown wrapping paper. He took one out. It felt like meat. He tore the package open at one end, revealing a woman's naked foot. The toenails were painted with purple-red polish. He dropped the leg with a sneer of disgust. Holy Jesus, he claimed. The routines people put down these days. Legs! Well, I got a case anyway. He dumped the other leg out. No bloodstains. He snapped the case shut and walked away. Legs, he muttered. He found the buyer sitting at a table in Harrow's cafeteria. Thought you might be taking the day off, Danny said, putting the case down. The buyer shook his head sadly. I got nobody, so what's Christmas to me? His eyes traveled over the case, poking, testing, looking for flaws. What was in it? Nothing. What's the matter? I don't pay enough. I tell you, there wasn't nothing in it. Okay, so somebody travels with an empty suitcase. Okay, he held up three fingers. For Christ's sake, Skimpy, give me a nickel. You got somebody else, why don't he give you a nickel? It's like I say, the case was empty.
Gimpy kicked at the case disparagingly. It's all nicked up and kind of dirty looking. He sniffed suspiciously. How come it stink like that? Mexican leather? So, am I in the leather business? Gimpy shrugged. Could be. He pulled out a roll of bills and peeled off three ones, dropping them on the table behind the napkin dispenser. You want? Okay, Danny picked up the money. You see George the Greek, he asked? Where are you, Ben? He got busted 2 days ago. Oh, that's bad. Danny walked out. Now where can I score, he thought. George the Greek had lasted so long, Danny thought of him as permanent. It was good age, too, and no short counts. Danny went up to 103rd and Broadway. Nobody in Harrow, nobody in the Automat. Yeah, he snarled, all the pushers off on the nod someplace. What they care about anybody else? So long as they get it in the vein. What they care about a sick junkie? He wiped his nose with one finger, looking around furtively. There was no one he knew in the 23rd Street Thompsons. Jeez, he thought, where is everybody? Clutched his coat collar together with one hand, looking up and down the street. There's Joey from Brooklyn. I'd know that hat anywhere. Joey, hey, Joey. Joey was walking away with his back to Danny. He turned around. His face was sunken, skull-like, the gray eyes glittering under a greasy gray felt hat. Joey was sniffing at regular intervals. His eyes were watering. No use asking him, Danny thought. They looked at each other with the hatred of disappointment. Guess you heard about George the Greek, Danny said. Yeah, I heard. He been up to 103rd? Yeah, just came from there. Nobody around. Nobody around any place, Joey said. I can't even score for goop balls. Well, Merry Christmas, Joey. See ya. Yeah, see ya. Danny was walking fast. He had remembered a croaker on 18th Street. Of course, the croaker had told him not to come back. Still, it was worth trying. The brownstone house with a card in the window. P.H. Zuniga, M.D. Danny rang the bell. He heard slow steps. The door opened and the doctor looked at Danny with bloodshot brown eyes. He said nothing. He just leaned there looking at Danny. Goddamn alcoholic, Danny thought. He smiled. Merry Christmas, Doctor. The doctor did not reply. You remember me, Doctor. Danny tried to edge past the doctor into the house. I'm sorry to trouble you on Christmas Day, but I've suffered another attack.
Attack?
Yes, facial neuralgia. Danny twisted one side of his face into a horrible grimace. The doctor recoiled slightly, and Danny pushed into the dark hallway. Better shut the door, you'll be catching cold, he said jovially, shoving the door shut. The doctor looked at him, his face focusing visibly. I can't give you a prescription, he said. But doctor, this is a legitimate condition, an emergency, you understand. No prescription impossible. It's against the law. You took an oath, Doctor. I'm in agony. Danny's voice shot up to a hysterical, grating whine. The doctor winced and passed a hand over his forehead. Let me think. I can give you one quarter grain tablet. That's all I have in the house.
But, Doctor, a quarter G.
The doctor stopped him. If your condition is legitimate, you will not need more. If it isn't, I don't want anything to do with you. Wait right here. The doctor weaved down the hall, leaving a wake of alcoholic breath. He came back and dropped a tablet into Danny's hand. Danny wrapped the tablet in a piece of paper and tucked it away. There is no charge. The doctor put his hand on the doorknob. And now, my dear, but doctor, can't you inject the medication? No, you will obtain longer relief than using orally. Please not to return. The doctor opened the door.
Well, this will take the edge off, and I still have money to put down on a room, Danny thought. Danny put down $2 on a $6 a week room in the West 40s, where he knew the landlord. He bolted the door and put his spoon, needle, and dropper on a table by the bed. He dropped the tablet in the spoon and covered it with a dropper full of water. He held a match under the spoon until the tablet dissolved. He tore a strip of paper, wet it, and wrapped it around the end of the dropper, fitting the needle over the wet paper to make an airtight connection. He dropped the piece of lint from his pocket into the spoon and sucked the liquid into the dropper through the needle, holding the needle in the lint to take up the last drop. Danny's hands trembled with excitement and his breath was quick. With a shot in front of him, his defenses gave way and junk sickness flooded his body. His legs began to twitch and ache. Cramp stirred in his stomach. Tears ran down his face from his smarting, burning eyes. He wrapped a handkerchief around his right arm, holding the end in his teeth. He tucked the handkerchief in and began rubbing his arm to bring out a vein. Guess I can hit that one, he thought, running one finger along the vein. Picked up the dropper in his left hand. Danny heard a groan from the next drum. He frowned with annoyance. Another groan. He could not help listening. He walked across the room, the dropper in his hand, and inclined his ear to the wall. The groans were coming at regular intervals, a horrible, inhuman sound pushed out from the stomach. Danny listened for a full minute. He returned to the bed and sat down. Why don't someone call a doctor, he thought indignantly. It's a bring down. He straightened his arm and poised the needle. He tilted his head, listening again. Oh, for Christ's sake. He tore off the handkerchief and placed the dropper in a water glass, which he hid behind the wastebasket. He stepped into the hall and knocked on the door of the next room. There was no answer. The groans continued. Danny tried the door. It was open. The shade was up and the room was full of light. He'd expected an old person somehow, but the man on the bed was very young, 18 or 20, fully clothed and doubled up with his hands clasped across his stomach. What's wrong, kid? Danny asked. The boy looked at him, his eyes blank with pain. Finally, he got out one word, kidneys. Kidney stones, Danny smiled. I don't mean it's funny, kid, it's just... I faked it so many times, never saw the real thing before. I'll call an ambulance. The boy bit his lip. Won't come. Doctors won't come. The boy hid his face in the pillow. Danny nodded. They figure it's just another junkie throwing a winding for a shot. But your case is legit. Maybe if I went to the hospital and explained things, no, I guess that wouldn't be so good. Danny trailed off. Suddenly he put out his thin, dirty hand and touched the boy's shoulder. I'm sorry, kid. You wait. I'll fix you up. He went back to his room and got the dropper and returned to the boy's room. Roll up your sleeve, kid. The boy fumbled his coat sleeve with a weak hand. That's okay. I'll get it. Danny undid the shirt button at the wrist and pushed the shirt and coat up, barring a thin brown forearm. Danny hesitated, looking at the dropper. Sweat ran down his nose. The boy was looking up at him. Danny shoved the needle in the boy's forearm and watched the liquid drain into the flesh. He straightened up. The boy's face began to relax. He sat up and smiled. Say, that stuff really works, he said. You a doctor, mister? No, kid. The boy lay down, stretching. I feel real sleepy. Didn't sleep all last night. His eyes were closing. Danny walked across the room and pulled the shade down. He went back to his room and closed the door without locking it. He sat on the bed, looking at the empty dropper. It was getting dark outside. Danny's body ached for junk, but it was a dull ache now, dull and hopeless.
Oh,
Suddenly a warm flood pulsed through his veins and broke in his head like a thousand golden speedballs. For Christ's sake, Danny thought, I must have scored for the immaculate fix. The vegetable serenity of junk settled in his tissues. His face went slack and peaceful, and his head fell forward. Danny the car wiper was on the nod.